Volume. Previously on La Duma High.
So people actually accused her?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the story. Yeah.
Even to her face?
Again, if they were happy about her acting, there was no point of recruiting me to go to that school.
Oh, if they were happy with her acting? Yeah.
Acting. There was no
point. They would have just had her.
Yeah. You see now? Because now of this rumor that she might be behind this thing. Hence then they recruited me to say and go and stabilize this school.
Do you think it's possible to speak to her?
Welcome to season 2 of Alibi. The story we are telling this time is called La Duma High. I'm Paul McNally. This is the 6th and final episode of our series. If this is the first episode that you're coming across, then go into the feed and find the first episode and start from there. You won't regret it. In this series, we've been exploring the brutal assassination of acting principal Priscilla Mthunu, who was gunned down with 19 bullets while teaching her class. After what happened in the last episode, I return to Johannesburg. Months go by. I routinely make calls to my sources to see if there have been any changes. More months go by until it is almost a year. Then in August 2019, I phone a source and they tell me that one teacher has recently left the school, La Duma High, due to intimidation. I get their number, call them, and they agree to meet me. So I fly down to Pietermaritzburg and sit with them in the parking lot of a vacated grocery store. We are both hunched up in my rental car. He doesn't want to be named. How would you like me to refer to you?
No. You can call me Mandla if you like, or you can Mr. Sorenson, depends.
So someone, but in terms of where you're from, or should just someone like a source?
No, it can't be.
He thinks for a second about a suitable title for us to call him in order to keep himself anonymous.
You can say, I speak to Mr. Sorenson, teacher at La Duma School.
Teacher, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. We need to identify the name that we're going to use.
Okay, tell me what name.
Let's just use Mr.
He's trying to think of a name that can be used that won't clash with a real name from a real teacher at La Duma.
There's Miss Laminde. I don't want to put someone in trouble.
No, it shouldn't be a name of someone that's already there.
Let us use Mr. We don't have Mr. Stroller there. Just use Mr. Sitole.
Mr. Sitole, okay. Sitole, as we are going to call him, arrived at La Duma in 2017. He just comes right out of the gate and says that not all accusations of teachers being involved in Priscilla's death are true.
The SGB suspected certain teachers that they were involved in the murder.
SGB,
yes.
Yeah. You'll remember that SGB stands for School Governing Body and is a group of parents, educators, students, and non-teaching staff who have oversight on the school's functions.
They were mentioning names of teachers whom they claim they were involved in the murder of Mrs. Mthunu.
Mm.
As a result, those teachers had a difficulty in terms of continuing teaching. It created a division or destroyed a link between the educators and the school governing body because of these claims by the school governing body.
Sitole thinks the school governing body had an ulterior motive, and that's why they've been accusing these teachers of being involved in the killing.
It was a question of the school governing body trying to remove those who were actually challenging them in terms of their behavior. So they used that as an opportunity to remove good educators. Those teachers could not teach because learners were being incited against them as the people were involved in the murder.
And here's the brutal part. The teachers didn't feel like they could discipline learners because they knew that if they riled up a kid, then the kid could rebut and accuse them of being complicit in Priscilla's murder. That's a hell of a weapon for a kid to have.
They were even afraid even in terms of disciplining learners. So that was the first situation that I had to correct.
The school governing body was also making life difficult by openly accusing teachers of being part of the assassination. And the openness of these accusations has been way more extreme than I realized.
Even teachers were actually, their names were actually mentioned as the people responsible. They were actually even traumatized.
And when you say they were mentioned, where was this mentioning going on?
You can go even meeting of the school governing body, meetings of parents meeting, these names, even learners were even aware, even outside people will tell you about these are the teachers who actually could, why are they here?
So the school governing body created a
problem, a major problem.
So they were accusing teachers and that created a separation.
They were accusing teachers, then they created a division. Even then, some government board will say, no, we don't want her, she must go, she's a killer and all that stuff.
Mm. So they were kind of taking advantage.
I'm saying to you, I wish that one day a thorough investigation could be conducted against them.
So the accusation is that the school governing body was targeting certain teachers, spreading rumors that they were part of the killing in order to get rid of them. But Sitoli still agrees that at least one teacher at the school ordered the hit. I mean, the reason why he is sitting here on leave, unshaven and in a T-shirt on a Wednesday afternoon is because his life has been threatened.
But you've left La Duma now.
I left La Duma.
I have no idea why Sitoli laughs here, but it is infectious.
No, I left. I nearly died, but I won't mention this because I'm not coming for that. My situation was not as good as people thought, but for me, what was important was that I put a brave face. I don't inform teachers about things that were happening because that would have actually destroyed the school, because everybody would actually move out of the school.
Sitoli has been away from work for a chunk of time. To say the exact date would make it easier for him to be identified.
I'm on sick leave.
Yeah.
Because of what happened. And I have no intention of going back.
So are you worried now? I know that you've left now, but are you still worried or are you okay? How are you feeling?
No, you say, I'm still worried. But I'm still worried. Because even, let me give you something. Even somewhere in August.
When he says August, he means August 2019.
They came here with firearms and they said they were going to kill somebody. I do have... So what happens, they came, I was somewhere, but within the school. I'm told that they took pictures of my car.
Mm.
Okay. When they left, they said they were going to kill somebody.
The men didn't say this directly to Sitoli, but passed the message on to him via someone else.
We'll come back here. What I previously is, it was a small thing. We'll come back. When we kill him, they won't believe.
Sitoli has two teachers that he suspects were involved in Priscilla's killing. And one of them is the same teacher, Miss Gabella, who followed me around when I visited Sia in the first episode. Sitoli says this is the same teacher who was talking to the man with the gun who visited the school.
When I used to go to school, I used four routes.
Four routes.
Four routes. Mm-hmm. Every day would change. Mm. Four routes. Mm. Every day. But I was not telling my family. Because I didn't want to worry them.
Mm.
Yeah. I kept to myself.
Have you had any contact with the police over this time at all?
You see, police, they're not prepared to work. I had a security. The department had given me security.
Mm.
So we nearly killed.
He didn't go to the police, but he says he was nearly killed one day while going to school.
All right.
Mm.
Early, because we normally left home about 5:30, I will go and collect these boys with my security, then we leave. On our way, on the mirror there, I saw this car following us. There's a hospital called Eden Hospital, you don't know. This car was following us across Richmond Road. They're following us down. This car. before entering the road, hey, this guy is actually falling over. They said, okay, they check it. Three at the back and one. And this guy followed us. Before the robot hit it in the air, it's just at a high speed, they were trying to push us out of the road.
Jeez.
And then as soon as I got to the side, and they pushed our right side in the speed of, okay, to the robot there. Then we followed.
Mm.
As we put the robot then they started to reverse, and also for reverse.
Mm.
I remember vividly clear, the one had this Springbok jacket, a hoodoo, was covering his face. The other one had a cap. The driver had these other hats, and the other one in the front was another hat. I could not see them clearly, but the one with the hoodoo, because he turned his face against us.
Mm.
As they were coming to me,
Satorley's security guard opened the door of the car while paused at a traffic light and intimidated the chasers, scared them right off.
From there on, they sped off. Mm. They sped and shut up.
Mm.
And we followed them. We followed them right way to their hospital.
Wow.
They entered these slums places there. Then we said, no, because we're not familiar with the road there. Let us go back.
They might be trying to lead you in.
Because we had papers there, exemption papers. We went straight to school. Never told anyone.
Jeez.
Satorley tells me straight that I should talk to the teacher we have been calling Monica, one of the widely suspected teachers. This is the same teacher that Principal Mahlaba said we must speak to in a previous episode. This teacher's name, her real name, has come up repeatedly. Accusations from all sides, unsubstantiated, but still.
It seems I just want to interview you. What happened? She will tell you everything. She can give you a lot of information regarding this matter.
And she is claiming innocence so loudly that she wants to talk to me to clear her name. I plan to meet Monica, the alleged suspect for ordering Priscilla's murder, which seems completely surreal. Across town in yet another parking lot, this time surrounded by the rush hour of a packed Checkers center. I'm suddenly really scared, more so than when I visited Gleeblands, because I know she will be getting in my car with me while we talk. But what makes it scarier is knowing that she won't be an immediate threat. But her learning my face and name could seal me to a fate days, weeks, or months down the line. I'm not about to be shot, right? But rather meet the person who could eventually instigate my murder. Monica, as we've been calling her, even though she agreed to speak, still doesn't want to use her real name. We greet quickly and then walk across the busy parking lot together, not talking. She is of a slight build with bulging eyes. Once in my car, she immediately starts talking.
I wanted to go and open a case for defamation of character, but I didn't know at that time who should I open the case against, because rumors were going on. People believed it. People who knew me closely, they would fight for me because they said, wait, we've been working with this person. She wouldn't do this. You can say whatever you want to say about her, but she wouldn't kill.
And do you think that this reputation is going to follow you around? Or do you hopefully it's gone now?
To me, it would make sense if it's gone. But even if it can follow me, I don't care because I didn't kill anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, and in life as a leader, you have to develop a hard stance and say to yourself, there are things you don't care about. You had to just take a hardline stance and be, they say you have to be an iron lady. Because really, if you depend on what people say to you and say about you and whatever, you won't go anywhere in life.
Monica is very careful to lay out all the peaceful interactions that she had with the deceased, Priscilla.
We were three HODs and two of us, myself and the late Priscilla Mkhunu, we applied.
She was HOD as well?
She was an HOD as well, okay, with me.
Yeah.
But she was the longest serving HOD because I found her there being an HOD.
She reminds me that Priscilla was the one who got the post of deputy principal in October 2016. And when the head principal promptly quit, it was then Priscilla who became the acting head. The tone is this forceful retelling of their whole history together.
We worked, I supported her, and to be honest with you, I had nothing against her.
Monica went on leave and says at that point, her and Priscilla were still getting along.
I left, there was nothing sinister, nothing like really showed that there were like there was tension, especially between me and her, who happened to apply for the deputy post. I left, I went home, I was at home. We used to communicate almost every week.
And at that point, she was acting principal.
She was acting principal at that point.
Then a few weeks went by.
And then after that, on the 20th, I think, if I'm not mistaken, March, the acting principal was shot dead at school.
When Monica touches on the actual killing, I'm searching her face, her demeanor. I'm trying to see if she'll betray her emotions somehow.
I was very shocked because, you know, when you're working, you might have differences and there might have been tensions at school because caused by one thing or another. But nobody really thought somebody could get killed.
There is an interesting admission of tension that has crept in here.
So I didn't even want to link the killing with whatever was happening at school. And
do you think they were linked?
I'm not sure. I didn't want to link it to because I'm a professional. I wouldn't really think somebody would be killed because of work-related issues. I phoned my husband, telling him what had happened, the tragedy. And my husband said to me, you know what? You should go to the school.
Monica is aware that what has bolstered a great deal of suspicion in her being involved in the killing is that she was there so promptly at the scene. So it makes sense that she would have an excuse ready without even really being prompted.
We came there. When we came, the cops was not there anymore. They had already removed her. The CMC manager said to me, ma'am, you happen to be the only person who is a permanent HOD who is left at school. The principal has retired, ma'am has been shot dead, and you are the one, and all the other two are there, they are acting. So can you please bear with us and cut your leave short and come and assist?
This is the other part of the rumor machine, the fact that Monica cut her leave short and came back to work. It was seen as calculated, a little heartless. And I will say that even though I have heard all these accusations from other sources, Monica just dives into them one after the other without even being asked.
And everything, believe me, was smooth internally. Until the day when, I think it was after we had gone to the family for the first time, the second time around we had to go with the SGB. There were tensions. There was this one character in the family who said she doesn't understand why we are there because there were such comments.
The character in the family who she is talking about is Priscilla's sister, Zanile, who we phoned and spoke to in a previous episode.
And to me, it didn't really make sense because, you know, when you haven't done something, you really, some things, they don't really make sense to you.
The complications followed into the memorial service that was held for Priscilla.
On the day of the funeral, we went as a school to the funeral, but you could see that we're not welcome. I don't blame the family because it's because of the things they had heard.
Yes. Where had they heard it from?
I don't know, but you couldn't blame them. They were grieving too. When somebody is grieving, you don't blame them. There were tensions. There was not even a speech on behalf of the staff members at the funeral. It's only the SGB chair.
The head of the school governing body, when Priscilla was killed, spoke at her memorial, which took place at City Hall. I mean, make of that what you will.
So things progressed. There were tensions between the family. when we had SATU meetings, she would be victimizing me, saying whatever she wanted to say.
This is still Zanile, who Monica is talking about.
So she would be showing off, doing all the things. I was putting up with that because she was grieving.
Monica and Zanile are both members of the union, and other members of the same union were taking Zanile aside and whispering to her, telling her things.
And one of the things they had been telling her is that I'm involved in her sister's killing. And I asked her, look at me. Why would I kill your sister for? What was I going to benefit in killing your sister? And when your sister passed on, I was on leave. I was not even at work. I don't even know what happened at work. If it was work-related, I was not there.
People are accusing you of this thing, this terrible thing.
Say, I must be honest to you, I've been through hell and back. Through hell and back. That happened. I continued working in the school. I applied for the deputy principal post because I was acting on the post. I did not want the post by force. I didn't want the post to be handed to me by a tray. I wanted to compete like everybody else. Mm. Apparently, things went the way they went. I was never shortlisted.
Monica, again and again during our interview, says that she was the one who was victimized.
And when you say victimized, how were you victimized?
They instigated the learners against me. They had to write a petition. They were assisted by one of the staff members to write a petition about me not being understood by the learners in class. The circuit manager ran meetings with the governing body at night about that issue, and I was not invited to those meetings, and I happened to be the SGB rep, a teacher rep in the SGB. They even had an arrangement of finding me a school elsewhere. And I would be like open to you, my relationship with the SGB, when the posts were advertised, it became sour. I didn't do anything to them, but it became sour. This guy came, swelled the ranks of the SGB. He tarnished my name, saying I killed the acting principal, telling everybody, like when you go to Mpumuza, you would be told that killed the late Miss Nkun. But with me, because my conscience was clear, I was worried about my image, but I did not care about the killing because I know I did not do it.
By this point, I am completely entranced by Monica. And yet I have no idea if what she is saying is the plea of someone who is innocent or the exaggerated protest of someone who is guilty.
But I'm saying I am the suspect. I have been investigated, but nothing is linking me to the killing. I happen to be the person who has been ostracized in whatever they were doing. In fact, we are three in the staff who are suspects, according to people.
Okay.
In a nutshell, I've been through hell and back, and people have portrayed as if myself and Miss Mkunu had been fighting over a post. I never fought over a post with her. We applied for the same post because we were both equal on the same level, and there was only one post. If she got the post, I was going to be happy with her, for her. If I got the post, I expected the same. But she got the post. I congratulated her. After the principal had left, I supported her. So I really don't know what made people thought I had killed her. Maybe it's because I agreed to come and assist the school when the school was in the time of crisis. But the question is, if I didn't come and help, who was going to help? Because I was the only senior person in the school.
Monica and I finish talking. She leaves my car. And I sit for a second and try to process what I've just experienced. Her excuses make sense at first glance. But Mahaba from Georgetown, the one with all the trophies, is right. Why did they ask him to step in? Why did they block teachers at Laduma, especially Monica, from taking Priscilla's post? And Monica's excuses, when I think about them, feel clean and rehearsed and overly diplomatic. On the other hand, Monica could have experienced a real-life smear campaign. People are still being openly accused, the family remains distraught, and the police docket remains elusive. Then I get some good news. There is a new fourth investigating officer assigned to the Laduma case. He's beginning to interview the players involved. He's based in Durban. I get his number and call him immediately.
Hello?
Hello, sir. This is Paul McNally. You said that I could call you today.
Yes, yes. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm working, clever.
What police station are you with?
No, I'm working in a provincial organized crime in Devon.
Moving the case to province is what Priscilla's sister Zanile always wanted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. And then, how is the Laduma case going?
He is looking into the cell phone records of the teachers at Laduma.
Okay, for the teachers?
Yeah.
Are you looking for the hitman, or are you looking for the person who ordered the hit?
Both.
Both, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then is there a chance that I could have a look at the docket as well? Do you have the docket?
Yes, I have the docket.
Okay, so maybe if I come down, do you think it would be possible for me to have a look at it?
Nah, no problem. I'll let you have a look at it.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, well, when is good then for me to come down?
I'm available during the week.
I ask him, what has brought about this sudden change? Why now? I mean, I'm grateful, but why now? Why is the case moving forward after all this time? There is an energy here that's fresh and exciting.
The family members complained, and then it was transferred to our branch now in provincial offices.
So what did the family members complain about?
That there's nobody was arrested since this incident took place.
Yeah, it's been unusual, hey.
Yeah. It's like that.
Okay, and do you feel positive that you will be able to get someone arrested?
Hey, if more information received, then I don't know at this moment, but I'm trying all my best.
Okay, fantastic.
I see the closed docket with my own eyes. It is a huge file. It looks like it has been well handled. I'm not allowed to record an interview with the investigating officer. And to be frank, he is more interested in finding out what information I have to give him rather than what he may want to give me. We stand at the side of the road beside his Toyota, and he mentions the names of teachers that are all too familiar. The lady who followed me around the location right at the start, her name comes up again. But he says he has no evidence against them to make an arrest. I ask him, why? And he rubs the side of his face and says that no one will make a written statement. I am happy that the case has been escalated to province. But as I look at the thick lever arch file of a docket in the boot of the Toyota, I wish that the investigating officer was more confident. Still, it is progress, more than I have seen since starting this case. For the last time, I go and visit Sia, the learner who witnessed the murder and has been an amateur detective in solving the case. He tells me that he has a new job, again as a cashier. I ask him about Priscilla's case, and he says his new strategy is to go and study law. He says Priscilla's case has inspired him to do that.
The reason I'm going to law, I want to find out what happens to my teacher, and then the love for politics and law.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't want to get in, are you going to get in to be a politician?
Yeah, because I like to talk.
Yeah.
But I want to go to parliament because I want to deal with something like this. With politics, everything, and laws. I want to deal with those things because I believe in justice. But right now, justice isn't served.
I sit here at the end of 6 episodes and think of Vanessa, the blonde activist and writer who took me to Gleeblands. I think of her obsessional nature around the assassinations and wonder if I have adopted some of her traits when it comes to Priscilla and the murder at Laduma. I go over again and again the features of the hitmen, that Sia revealed in episode 3, and the detail from the investigating officer who said that it was likely that he was from Inanda, a location about 20 kilometers outside of Durban. I think of the thin tribal scars that Sia said the hitman had, and how he illustrated this by pointing at his own face. And I can't help but feel hopeful for Dumisani, Sia's father, who we met at the police station in episode 2. Because he is now the head of the school governing body at Laduma. He was the guy who was working on the case on the sly and bringing mugshots home to Sia to check out. I hope that he can instill some positive oversight into the school. A man who was so emotional over the death of Priscilla and what it meant for the fate of the school at least is a safe pair of hands as head of the school governing body. And hopefully with this fourth investigating officer at Province focused on solving the case, Dumisani can finally help and be heard. I think about Priscilla's appointment and how we spoke to Lamini about it as he sat in his boxes at the Mediclinic. And then we spoke to the ward counselor in City Hall about a meeting Priscilla called asking for help. And then we went to the man who took over her job, Mr. Makhaba, and discovered that he also suspected the teachers at the school for being involved in the murder. These alleged suspects, who are meant to have ordered the hit on Priscilla, have been the center of our story. They've been circling us the whole time. And in this episode, we spoke directly to one of them. On the list from the start has been the teacher who followed me around the location when I visited Sia, the woman we called Miss Cabela. And there was the man with taxis and a tuck shop who we called Kamalo. Those two and a third person. This third person Makhaba said we should talk to, the one we called Monica. And in the interview, she laid out all the reasons why we should think she was innocent. And to be honest, my opinion sways from day to day, believing her and then not. What I have learned is that people can have complicated motives for talking to a journalist. And though she didn't have to speak to me, something compelled her powerfully to do so. If we had the answer to what compelled her, then we'd have the answer to the whole story. Instead, we will have to rely on those in the community who still want to see this case solved. There are many, and they are still determined. You've been listening to season 2 in its entirety of Alibi. This podcast has been written, edited, and produced by me, Paul McNally. Thanks to Gavin Haynes, Kyla Hermanson, Jeff Kelly Lowenstein, Tom McNally, and Stels Desoy for their editorial oversight. This episode was mixed with love by Gwinch Sarame. The music for this series was composed by John Bartman. This episode was produced by Volume and is available wherever you get your podcasts, from Apple to Google to Spotify, but particularly at www.volume.africa/alibi. Here you will also find our first series that tracked a possible wrongful conviction. Finally, we want to thank our publishing partner, Arena Holdings, publishers of the Sunday Times, timeslive.co.za, Business Day, Financial Mail, and The Sowetan, and their head of multimedia, Scott Peter Smith, for supporting the project and pulling all the pieces together on their platforms. It has been a pleasure sharing this story with you. I'd like to thank everyone who was interviewed and put the effort in to make it possible. Until next time, goodbye. Volume.